Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today we are starting a series of shows about the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War, which is on April 30th. The Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network is commemorating the anniversary from the perspective of the Vietnamese diaspora. DVAN is an arts nonprofit dedicated to moving the voices and stories of the Vietnamese diaspora from the margins to the center. They're hosting an event called Still We Rise on April 26th at 6 p.m. at the Sydney Goldstein Theater in San Francisco. The event will feature renowned Vietnamese artists and activists. You can find ticket information at dvan.org. The Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network just came out with a new book called The Cleaving, Vietnamese Writers in the Diaspora. It's a collection of conversations among Vietnamese artists located in many parts of the world, including the United States, Australia, and France. In the introduction, Lan Duong writes, quote, "The word cleaving alludes to the formation of a diaspora, one that's been separated, not so cleanly from its homeland, and yet nonetheless cleaves closely to this origin, a cleaving, a leaving, a heaving. The varied contributions show that conditions of diaspora are rooted in the entanglements of war and imperialism, and fundamentally shape the diasporic writer's voice and persona, as well as aesthetic and political style. Being in the diaspora, far from home and yet longing for it, produces the possibility of nostalgia, but also critique, whose edge we sharpen here to draw attention to the nation state and its mode of statecraft, whether this is the country in which the writers presently live and or Vietnam itself." Joining us are two guests who led a writer's residency in Vietnam in January. They brought young poets born in the United States to meet with writers in Vietnam. These young people had never been to Vietnam. Dr. Isabel Thuy Pelo is co-editor of The Cleaving, Vietnamese Writers in the Diaspora Dialogues. Isabel Thuy Pelo was born and raised in France and came to the Bay Area when she was 19. She's co-founder and executive director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network. She's also professor at San Francisco State University and author of This Is All I Choose to Tell, History and Hybridity in Vietnamese American Literature. Isabel is also co-editor of Troubling Borders, an anthology of art and literature by Southeast Asian women in the diaspora. Hi, Isabel. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. Kathy Nguyen was born in Saigon and was raised in San Francisco. Kathy Nguyen is co-director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network and co-editor of the book Troubling Borders, an anthology of art and literature by Southeast Asian women in the diaspora. Kathy Nguyen's short essays, stories, and articles have appeared in 14 Hills, Fringe, Women's World, and elsewhere. She is a recipient of the San Francisco Artist Grant and Artist Impact Endowment. Hi, Kathy. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have both of you. I'm noticing that the 50th anniversary is starting to get a lot more media attention, and I'm sure next week, because it falls on Wednesday, it's going to get even more. And I'm wondering, let's start with you, Isabel. What are you hoping comes from the news coverage and the conversations that we have about the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War? What are you hoping comes from these discussions?
Well, thank you for the questions. Well, this is an opportunity for the Vietnamese American community to have a microphone, to be heard. So many of us are having events for the community, you know, for us, for ourselves, for us to heal and be together and build community, but also to be heard so that more people understand who we are, be, you know, really reflect on the stereotypes maybe or the predetermined ideas about who we are, because we've been so often defined by war. and really see our humanity and our complexity, because even 50 years later, like for example, the books we just produced with the cleaving really tell us that it's still important, it's still needed in this country. So we really want to insist on that. And Divan does that through story and literature and poetry.
What about you, Kathy? What are you hoping to hear from conversations about this anniversary?
Well, my hope is that, as Issa also mentioned, is that we are able to share our perspective. Obviously, we can't get away from the war. This is a major landmark moment in our history, in American history, that has impacted so many of us, not just Vietnamese Americans, but also Lao and Cambodian Americans. So we really want to have these conversations about the impacts of that war that brought us here and that created the diaspora, not just in the US, but worldwide. For so long, we have been defined by the American narrative of war and the perspectives of American soldiers. But there are so many stories, a myriad of stories that come from our community, from the diaspora community. And I think this is an opportunity for the American public to learn about our perspectives.
And they can do that in many ways. I mean, Divan has done such incredible work. We're going to talk about the new book that you just published, but I understand that by the end of this year, Isabel, you will have published 18 books. I mean, that's incredible.
Yes, and that is in less than 3 years, and that's
Wow.
important. So we started during the pandemic because we've been, Divan has been in the Bay Area doing a public event for more than 20 years, actually. But during the pandemic, we couldn't do public events. So we thought, well, we had this hunch that it was difficult for writers to be published. So we thought, well, let's try to work with publishers to have imprint. And what we learn is that the publishing industry is, 73% of the workforce is white. And, there's, what is it, 90% of books had been published, right? By, no. Yeah, by white writers, right? And 10% by people of colors in 2022, according to the New York Times. So we were amazed actually by, having imprints that how much demand there were and how many, the bottleneck. So many good writers cannot find, cannot be published. And we were very surprised because our imprint were designed for, like new writers, emerging writers, but also established writers started to send us a manuscript because they trusted us, because we fight for your royalty, we fight for the cover to make sure it's not stereotypical, we advocate for them, right, with publishers, and then we help them promote the books. And for example, Abigail Rosewood, Nguyen Rosewood, she used her Vietnamese name with us when she did not do this before with mainstream publishers. So this is also very empowering ways, very empowering for Vietnamese American writers to work with us. So what started with something really small and something to help emerging writers to be published ended up being like a full blood, full blown, like project. And yes, in less than 3 years, in 3 years, by next year, by December 2025, we will have 18 books. So we are blown away. So
Wow.
that's what it tells us about the demand and also the bottleneck in the publishing industry, because those books are really good. And we also translate, right, books from France to English, English to Vietnamese to English, because our community has been spread in different part of the world, and it's very important for us for, combat, what's being taught to us, and sometimes we have ideas about each other's because of colonialism and war, that is very important for us to have dialogues within our community across national borders in order to have better understanding with each other's. as well as to educate the larger population about us. And yes, and then in addition to this, we have an online magazine that we're going in print in December because we see how important that is in order to promote all this work. Because if nobody is doing it for us, nobody's going to do it for us. We have to do it ourselves.
Right.
And it's so important.
Wow, that's incredible. Congratulations. And Kathy, the Diasporic Vietnamese Artist Network started out by focusing on new voices, but I understand that established voices reached out to you all because they were often told to change their narratives.
Yeah, so Abigail Wing Rosewood, for example, is a good example of that, where she did not feel that mainstream publishers were letting her tell the story that she wanted to tell on her own terms. And so, she came to us. Her manuscript is really quite beautiful. And so it's with writers like that feel that we have created this space for diasporic writers. And so we're seeing a lot of that. Our lineup for Still We Rise this weekend has incredible talent. Balfi is an award-winning spoken word poet. Paul Tran is an internationally acclaimed poet as well. So what we're seeing is a lot of the established writers also are benefiting from the work that we do because we nurture them and we support them through those public events, through readings, through writers' residencies. So this is it's a full cycle of support. It doesn't just it starts with the publishing, but it is a very what do I say? Like a very comprehensive program of support of nurturing writers.
Well, and if you'd like to learn more about the Still We Rise event 50 years after the Vietnam War, it's Saturday, April 26th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Sydney Goldstein Theater in San Francisco. You can find ticket information at dvan.org. DVAN also just came out with a new book called The Cleaving. And Isabel, in the conclusion, you write that the collection of writers and artists' voices found within The Cleaving assert that in 2025, it is still necessary to insist that diasporic Vietnamese writers are full human beings with complex, diverse immigration histories and views. Like other artists, these writers are preoccupied with form and the arduous task of crafting art. That they come from a country that was colonized for a century by the French and at war for more than two decades with the United States produces a unique challenge to create freely on one's own terms. Can you talk more about that and how that's
Sure.
also affected you personally?
Yes, so maybe. So a few challenges that Vietnamese American writers have, right? So one is, as we said earlier, we've been defined so much by the Vietnam War, right? So for a long time, Vietnamese writers have really have a difficult time to be published if they did not write about the war or in the refugee experience in a way that what is not very threatened, right, in certain ways. Secondly, right, as minority writers, right, because we came here, we suddenly, seen as Asian Americans. There's also we Asian Americans are underrepresented in literature, right? I teach Asian American literature, and it's very clear. And there's also, racism, right, and visibility with Asian Americans being seen as model minority and not needed. Special forum to be understood or to be supported. Also, one thing that Vietnamese American writers encounter in terms of challenge that we noted clearly with the cleaving is also community, right? Sometimes the community, because it's vulnerable, didn't want to air the dirty laundries. And writers, they have to speak the truth. And especially women and queer sometimes have difficulty in, for example, writing about domestic violence or being, not rejected by the family if they were gay or lesbians or trans, right? So there's community pressure also to appear certain ways and to not speak up, right? Because of the fear and not feeling a sense of belonging. And I also have to say about identity politics. I teach Asian American Studies. I'm an Asian American Studies scholar, but for example, the books that are being taught in those classrooms are books that talks about denounce racism, right? This is how we select books. But initially, books by Vietnamese American writers, right? Because Vietnamese were refugees and forced out of the countries, there's a lot of writing about figure out the relationship with Vietnam, right? And that's early writers, that was the main preoccupations more than racism, right? And then racism also became part of the narrative, but also this other things that is being discussed that somehow is not taught. And maybe I will say, I mean, it's hard to say this, but I'd say among Asian Americans, although Southeast Asians have struggled economically, maybe more so than other East Asian, for example, there's a little bit of racial hierarchy, right? Especially, when I started to teach, and then even more so, I mean, even now, when we look for funding, we found it that is difficult, right, to get into the pool of to fund to get fundings for Southeast Asians, as an organization, here we are, a few people trying to do the work to support writers, right, and Southeast Asian writers, Vietnamese American writers, starting with that because that's what we know. But we also realize that the systemic barriers, there's very little funding that go to literary art organizations, and among Asian American, even less so for Southeast Asians. So even to be supported is to support those writers is very difficult. So I don't know if I answer your questions. And then personally, yes, it's been very difficult to do this work. I mean, I'm from France, right? And because of the history of 100 years of colonialism, right, from the French in Vietnam, and I immigrated here, right, because for different reason, and to be and my story is part of the complexity and diversity of Vietnamese Americans, and even to do the work that I do and to speak, it's been a very personal challenge for me to even take the space as a woman and as a mixed race person from, with my mother from Vietnam.
Right. And I've read so many interviews you've done. In a 2019 interview you did with the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network, you said it was very hard for you to become a so-called expert in Vietnamese American literature because you don't speak Vietnamese, you're not a refugee, you're mixed race. You said you never thought you'd become a professor considering your class background. It took you a long time to finally decide to do this work, but you saw a need for it. So can you tell us, Isabel, a bit about your complex background? I mean, again, we always say on this show, everyone has a story. So tell us a bit about your background.
Yes, I'll try to be brief. Well, my mother is Vietnamese, and my father is French. I was born in France, and I immigrated here, or I came to this country when I was 19. My mother sent me to live with her sister, who is a refugee from Vietnam. I was been here for 10 years. And it was a difficult living situation because they were struggling. So my aunt sent me to work as a manicurist. So I did this for maybe a year and a half. And and then sent me to school to be in technical school. So I was really not expected to go to university. I had to run away in order for me to pursue my education. So I hate to say this, but now everything's good with the family. I mean, this is me being pursuing education, higher education has really been an accident, right? It's just been very lucky that this one thing led to another. But when, oops, yes, and then after that, because I'm mixed race, because I'm from France, because I'm immigrants, because I don't speak Vietnamese, although I really wanted to learn about my mother and why what was behind all this silence and why I felt the way I did, and because I and also because I could really relate to Vietnamese American writers, because we all didn't feel comfortable and didn't have a much of a sense of belonging, neither being totally fully in the community, not being totally belonging in American society. For me to do this work, I had to fight my inner voice to tell me, you cannot do this. There was no space for people like me to speak. And there was no field. The Vietnamese American literary field did not exist. So I had to, my book is the first book about, and the only book about Vietnamese American literature, and really began the field of Vietnamese American literary studies. But all of that, I had to do it without faith that I could. And I think that's is an invisible barrier that, is people don't see that. But yes, it was difficult.
Well, and you were also told that you couldn't do this because in another article in UC Berkeley News, you talked about how you eventually worked after you landed in California at 19. You worked for a South Asian family who ran a deli in Milpitas. And one day the owner's daughter came home from her studies at UC Davis, which you had never heard of, and you were interested. And you said, "Can I also go there?" And your employer overheard and laughed and said, "Isabel, UCs are not for you. Not everyone can attend."
Yes, that's exactly what happened. And I should thank him, because it's only because he said that that it triggered my curiosity. And I said, well, because I have a stubborn streak, I said, well, whatever that UC is, I'm going to go there, whatever that is. So, and I only applied to UC Berkeley because UC Davis seems too far, I didn't have a car. So I was in community college at the time, working for this South Asian deli. And actually, a financial advisor was a Vietnam vet. He helped me, I think it was to navigate how to get scholarships and grants, and so I couldn't have to work, so much and focus on my study, so that I could transfer to this whatever UC was. But it's because I was told specifically I could not go that I decided to go. Yeah, and the same thing with my family. I was told that I had to work and yes, so and not go to school basically, because I was not seen as, because I didn't speak Vietnamese, I didn't speak English, and I was very quiet. Actually, coming here, I stuttered. I was basically mute. So for me, even to come up with language, I had to learn how to do this in English. I mean, I still have a difficult time, you can hear. Yeah.
Wow. It's incredible because I'm sure people make assumptions based on the fact that you're a professor in the Asian American Studies Department at San Francisco and have written books and edited books. I mean, we all do this, of course. We make assumptions without knowing your background.
Yes. And this is the reason I'm invested in wanting to write my own story in my own way, in my own terms, because actually, sometimes my story has been used as demonstrating that the model minority is true, right? That here I am from Manicurist, I work hard and I succeed. And I really want to show and address the difficulties and how much, I have nightmares. I have, issues that people don't see because of, the scars I had throughout the journey. Because being here as a young woman without, money and support, I was very vulnerable, and I did get hurt along the way. It was very difficult. Yeah. So I want to tell that story that way. So to complicate this idea of success. Yeah.
Exactly. And also for young people who may have had a similar experience or a similar childhood, to hear your story is very powerful. Before we go to break, Isabel, would you mind telling us a bit about your mom? Because you talk about her in many of the interviews that you've done.
Oh, yes. Yes, my mother just lived in with me actually this year. My mother, she's born in Vietnam. She was a daughter number eight of of what, nine siblings, right? So she came here, I believe. Actually, she was one of the first Vietnamese coming to the US in the 60s, in 63, because she received, she was able to get a passport because a brother was working with the Diem, President Diem, and then because he was assassinated, he didn't come here with his family because he worked for them, but he was able to bring one person from his extended family, so he chose my mother. So she had the passport. She came to this country. She actually lived in Tiburon
Oh,
in
wow.
early 60s, and she was all by herself, didn't speak Vietnamese, and she had a very difficult time because there was nobody else. She was by herself and no education, so wanting to go to school but did not understand English and had a hard time, and eventually joined my father, who was a teacher in Vietnam, who were writing her letters, and she went there and lived in the countryside with him and his parents. And I think she really suffered tremendously because she's 30 years younger than him and really was not accepted by his family, because she was 30 years younger, didn't speak much French, was not really well educated, and Vietnamese, right? There's also racism that played there. So we live in the countryside and move from place to place every 5 years, and my mother really wants to come to the US, and she thought it was really wonderful because she remembered Tiburon and the sister were here as refugee and really wanted to be reunited with them. So she always wanted that, and I was a ticket to bring her here. So she sent me here with one-way ticket at 19, and somehow I had to find a way to make it here and bring her here. And I did.
Wow.
And she's in my house now.
Oh, wow. Amazing story. Thank you for sharing that. Dr. Isabelle Thuy Pelo is co-editor of the new book, The Cleaving: Vietnamese Writers in the Diaspora. She was born and raised in France and came to the Bay Area when she was 19. Isabelle Thuy Pelo is co-founder and executive director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network, an arts nonprofit dedicated to moving the voices and stories of the Vietnamese diaspora from the margins to the center. She's also a professor in the Asian American Studies Department at San Francisco State University. We're also joined today by Kathy Nguyen. Kathy was born in Saigon and was raised in San Francisco. Kathy will tell us her story after the break. She is co-director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network, and they are hosting an event called Still We Rise, 50 years after the Vietnam War. It'll be on April 26th at 6 p.m. at the Sydney Goldstein Theater in San Francisco. It'll feature renowned Vietnamese artists and activists. You can find ticket information at dvan.org. And today we are starting a series of shows around the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. If you would like to share your reflections, if you have any questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. If you're part of the Vietnamese diaspora, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We are discussing the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. We are going to be doing a series about this. It's on April 30th. The Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network is commemorating the anniversary from the perspective of the Vietnam diaspora. They're hosting an event called Still We Rise on April 26th at 6 p.m. at the Sydney Goldstein Theater in San Francisco. You can find ticket information at dvan.org. They also just came out with a new book called The Cleaving: Vietnamese Writers in the Diaspora. It's a collection of conversations among Vietnamese artists located in many parts of the world, including the U.S., Australia, and France. And today we're joined by Dr. Isabelle Thuy Pelo, co-editor of The Clevine. She was born and raised in France and came to the Bay Area when she was 19. She's co-founder and executive director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network and professor in the Asian American Studies Department at San Francisco State University. We're also joined by Kathy Nguyen. Kathy was born in Saigon and was raised in San Francisco. She's co-director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network and co-editor of the book Troubling Borders, an anthology of art and literature by Southeast Asian women in the diaspora. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Kathy, let's take a little bit of time and talk about your story. You were actually born in Saigon and you were raised in San Francisco. And your mother was a translator for the Defense Attaché Office in Vietnam. Can you tell us more about your family?
Sure. So I was born in Saigon, as you mentioned. I have two siblings, and my mother was working as a translator for the Defense Attaché Office called the DAO in Saigon during the war. And my father was a major in the South Vietnamese Army. And so our story is different. We have a refugee journey where we were actually my mother working in the intelligence department of the DAO at the time, she was told that she had to evacuate. So we actually left on April 20th, which is 10 days before the fall of Saigon. My mother was on a very high risk list because she had access to sensitive information. So she was given 2 hours to leave. And so they told her to go home, get your family. My father, being a South Vietnamese Army officer, refused to go. He was actually afraid that he would be court-martialed. But understanding the great risk, he relented to my mother's demands because, you know, they had three small children. I was 3 years old at the time. My brother was 11 months old, and my sister was six. So they thought when they left on a C-130 plane that they might return, that it was a temporary leave. Obviously, that didn't happen. So we were sent to refugee camps in the Philippines and Guam, and we landed at Camp Pendleton right before, or may have been on the 30th when Saigon fell. That's when we heard the news. And it was very devastating for my parents because at the time, I think there was still a belief in their minds that there might be a chance for a resolution and not the outcome that ended up happening for them. So for them working so closely with the Americans as allies, they really felt a sense of betrayal.
Wow. What was the experience like for your parents, in the first few months they were in the U.S.?
I think it was devastating for them, like for so many South Vietnamese people, because now we were citizens of no country, right? We couldn't leave the refugee camp until we had a sponsor. So we ended up in Pendleton near San Diego. And, you know, leaving with 2 hours notice, you know, they didn't have time to say goodbye to their parents, to their siblings, to their families. I think they were quite traumatized by that experience, and that has really shaped their life experience in the U.S., where, you know, my father, he had a very difficult time being a former combatant. He did not speak English. My mother was able to navigate better because she had studied English in Vietnam, and that's how she got a job as a translator, and she was translating, you know, very sensitive documents for American generals and the DAO office there in Saigon. So I think it was very difficult for them. It still is. They still live here in San Francisco, wow, not too far from me. But that experience of displacement and of being, you know, having their entire lives turned upside down has been very difficult.
Were they ever able to return to Vietnam?
Yes. So I went back with them 20 years later after the economic embargo was lifted. We went back to Vietnam in 95. And by then, you know, my grandparents had passed on. But we did, reunite with our family members that were still surviving in Saigon. And, had my father not left, even though he didn't want to at the time, I mean, he would have been in a re-education camp. We know, many of his fellow soldiers did go through that experience. And so it was a very emotional and experience for us going back to Vietnam. And I've since gone back quite a bit. I studied there for a year, and so navigating that space is really quite difficult because, and we talk a lot about this as Devan and the writers that we support is, we were basically separated from a homeland that we still remember quite fondly, many of us, but at the same time, we're not really recognized as Vietnamese in Vietnam necessarily. So it's very difficult to navigate that complexity and that relationship, especially coming from the losing side, where we were considered Viet Kieu, which is a years ago was a derogatory term for Vietnamese overseas. I think that's changing. It's changed a lot, but it has been a very thorny kind of relationship.
What have the conversations been like with your parents, given that the 50th anniversary of the end of the war is next week?
There's a lot of pain and a lot of sorrow, I would say. They look at that time as a time where they lost everything. They lost their country, they lost their home. For my father, his language, his ability to communicate. He was an artillery commander, so he lost much of his hearing after the war. And so I think it is a story like many stories of refugees. It's a story of sadness and a lot of pain. And so I think this idea of the model minority that Isabel mentioned, there are some successes, yes, but it also came with a lot of sacrifice and a lot of struggle. And not everyone succeeds. There are many, many former combatant soldiers like my father who are not considered veterans. He was a combatant for 15 years in Vietnam. And yet here they don't have the benefits of that U.S. Veterans have, for example, even though they served in America's proxy war. So that is a and that generation is dying. Many of them suffer from PTSD. They don't have the basic medical care. They don't have that entitlement. So I think it's a really sad story. And I will say that the first time I visited the Vietnam Memorial Wall in DC, I was really struck by the senselessness of that war and seeing all those names of fallen soldiers. But also, there isn't a memorial like that, for South Vietnamese soldiers. And I remember my aunt asking me, where are the names of all of the South Vietnamese, some 150,000 killed? And they do not exist. They've been erased from that history. But even more poignantly in Vietnam, they have been kind of demonized as American lackeys. And so they are not, they there is a culture of erasure, both in Vietnam for those veterans as well as in the US. And I think to me that's very sad.
Kathy Nguyen was born in Saigon and was raised in San Francisco, sharing her incredible story about her parents and how they were affected by the Vietnam War. Today, we are starting a series of shows about the 50th anniversary of the end of the war. It is on April 30th. Kathy is co-director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artist Network and co-editor of the book Troubling Borders, an anthology of art and literature by Southeast Asian women in the diaspora. Dr. Isabel Thuy Pillo is co-editor of the new book The Cleaving: Vietnamese Writers in the Diaspora. Isabel was born and raised in France and came to the Bay Area when she was 19, and she's co-founder and executive director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network. And they are hosting an event called Still We Rise on April 26th at 6 p.m. at the Sydney Goldstein Theater in San Francisco. You can find ticket information at dvan.org. Oh, you know, gosh, hearing your stories, Kathy and Isabel, it's so easy to simplify things in this country. I mean, politicians, of course, do it all the time. And they talk about, you don't really hear the word refugee as much as you hear the word immigrant. Mm-hmm. And it's always framed as people coming to this country for a better life. Mm-hmm. And so can you talk about that, Isabel? Because you work with so many incredible Vietnamese writers from all over the world, but especially in the United States, and they have such a varied background. What do you think it will take to change that narrative? I mean, you're all doing a really incredible job of it, but still, it's all very simplistic oftentimes in this country. I mean, and then when you think about Vietnamese people, I mean, people are just lumped into Asian in this country. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yes. Well, that's a problem, right? And refugees is like so many refugees, you know, from wars and climate change right now. I mean, it's an international crisis. And yet, you know, yes, as you say, refugee has been conflicted with immigrants, but refugee, we have to remember, you know, we're forced to leave. They don't want to leave, right? Mm. And the definitions of refugees is, you know, people are forced to leave because, you know, of the fear of because of being harmed or killed, right? If they stayed, or because of political affiliation or religious affiliation and so forth. Actually, Vietnamese, when first came to this country in 75, you know, people were accusing Vietnamese to be here for economic gains, right, as economic migrants, and telling them to go back where they come from. Or sometimes people actually Vietnamese have been, you know, there was some shooting, right? Because some people saw Vietnamese as not Vietnamese, as enemy being here, but actually Vietnamese Americans were the allies of Americans. And, you know, I mean, we can see the parallel, right, with refugees in Afghanistan, right? Is what happened when you go to a country and enlist people to fight on your side, and they risk everything, right, to fight on your sides, and then you lose the war, and then, you know, a lot of stories by Vietnamese Americans also, although there's a narrative of gratitude, is also mitigated with stories or feelings of abandonment, right? It's like they've been abandoned. It was not too much, you know, policy in place to bring Vietnamese out of Vietnam in April 30th, 1975. It's actually American vet who did a lot of effort to do this. And that is afterthought, what you do with refugees. And then what happened with refugees is not all equals, right? Not every country is where there is human rights violations or people are afraid to you know, cannot stay in the country because otherwise it'll be killed, can come to this country. I mean, Vietnam was, people knew about the war in Vietnam, right? But for example, in Cambodia, it was a secret war. It was not authorized by the Congress. So then, you know, refugees, when people apply for refugees, and it was Pol Pot, it was a genocide, right? 1 million out of 7 million people got killed there. They couldn't come here in very small numbers because, you know, they cannot be recognized as refugees because they were not seen, you know, because the war was never declared officially in Cambodia, right, or in Laos. So it is a big problem. And the work that we do through literature and stories and poetries is really about changing the you know, to educate, as I say, you know, I'm an educator, educate mainstream about, you know, who are we as a people from being scattered in different part of the world, right, through colonization and forced out of our countries, right, like my aunt and my uncle and my cousin, because of war, because that's make a difference. And then also how you teach those work, right, is you know, it's racism, but it's also something else. It's about imperialism. It's about, you know, like intervening in other country militarily, and fighting one's war outside my own country, right? To with other superpower, right? It's like at the time it was with China, right? So yes, it is a problem, and we do what we can to do this, and our visions is by empowering writers, having public event, having publications, having residencies, right, to writers to be empowered, to have the courage to speak on their own term and help each other, support one another, and then also have dialogues between different countries. So this internal colonialism, right, this ideas about that we may have about each other can be revised as well, is important, so that what the writers will write might be stronger by working together, by organizing. A voice will be stronger, and we'll feel stronger as a community. And as a result, if we are better understood, right, what happened to us, we cannot, people could not go back to where we came from because of fear of death, right, or repercussions, then we'll be better treated, we'll be better respected as a community. And we have a lot to contribute to these societies, because here, for the case of Vietnamese Americans, we are Americans, we are part of this society, and we're still fighting for that space. And that's Divan's work.
We have a few emails like Phillips. He writes, "In my view, Hollywood is responsible for a great deal of destructive racism regarding the Vietnamese people. A good example of this would be the movie The Deer Hunter. I would think that part of being a Vietnamese writer would be the task of constructing a positive counter narrative." What are your thoughts on this, Kathy? Because many people write about how it's so unfortunate that the word Vietnam is connected to the word war. It's just Vietnam War. So can you talk about that and just talk about some of this destructive racism that we have seen over the years in the media and in films?
Sure. I mean, I think that entire canon of American movies, Apocalypse Now, Deer Hunter, Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, that is what the American public generally sees Vietnam as, because that's the way it's been depicted. Vietnam is a country, it is not just a war. And in those films, the Vietnamese are extras, or they've been killed or maimed. They don't have lines. They don't have any humanity in those films. And I think that's why a lot of the perceptions, the public perceptions about Vietnamese people as a whole, is really skewed, misunderstood. And so the work that we do, actually, Divan released what we call the Divan List, which was modeled after the Blacklist, where we recommend novels and stories, short stories, to be adapted and made into film. And we want to change also the film industry in that way. And we released that list last year. We launched it actually in Hollywood in 2024, and really in alignment with The Sympathizer being made into an HBO series that gives a perspective from the Vietnamese people, so to counter those Apocalypse Now types of narratives, Deer Hunter, et cetera. So I think Philip's question or statement is a very poignant one, because that's also what Divan does, providing these counter narratives to what the American public has been consuming for 20 years since the end of the war. As Isabel mentioned earlier, there are many, many stories, many of them by women, Vietnamese women. We've published books, called Longings, for example, that has stories by women. A lot of those stories are still untold. The first book that Devan actually produced, that Isabel and I both edited, called Troubling Borders, which you referenced earlier, is a compilation of stories and art by Southeast Asian women in the diaspora. And when we went to publish that book, we had a really hard time getting support because we were told that Southeast Asian women artists don't exist. They don't write, they don't produce art. And so we had to counter that. We had to, do fundraising, Kickstarter efforts in order to publish that book in color because there's beautiful artwork in that book. So these are the challenges that we face in doing this work, but it's really important for us because we know that our stories matter, and it's important for American culture and society as a whole to understand, that we are not just here by choice. We are here because of a legacy of colonialism and militarism. And I think a lot of those stories are coming out from the diaspora, and that is the work that we do.
Well, and Devan, the Diasporic Vietnamese Artist Network just came out with a new book called The Cleaving: Vietnamese Writers in the Diaspora. It's a collection of conversations among Vietnamese artists in many parts of the world, including the US and France. Devan is also hosting an event called Still We Rise on April 26th at 6 p.m. at the Sydney Goldstein Theater in San Francisco. It'll feature Vietnamese artists and activists. There will also be music. You can find ticket information at dvan.org. And if you'd like to know more about today's guests, you can find information at kalw.org, click news, and your call. Kathy Nguyen was born in Saigon and was raised in San Francisco. She's co-director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network. And you can find more information about Kathy at our website. Dr. Isabel Thuy Pelo is co-editor of the book, The Cleaving. She was born and raised in France, came to the Bay Area when she was 19. She's co-founder and executive director of the Diasporic Vietnamese Artists Network and professor in the Asian American Studies Department at San Francisco State University. Isabel and Kathy, thank you so much for the important work you do and really centering the voices of Vietnamese writers and activists. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show today. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.